Good afternoon. I'm calling this January 17th meeting of the Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum present. Vice Chair Norris, do I have a motion to move the minutes of January 11th?
Chair Gomez, I move to approve the minutes from the January 11th meeting.
All right. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. January 11th minutes are approved as submitted. Okay, so we have a couple more pieces of overview that we're going to do today, and we're going to hear our first bill. So we're going to start with our friends from House Fiscal, and so I'll just turn it over to you guys.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal staff, for this walkthrough today of revenue estimates and spreadsheets. We do not have a PowerPoint presentation. We have two handouts. One is an example spreadsheet. It's kind of nondescript and you can have it in your packet. And another handout is example revenue estimates and fiscal notes. My colleague, Ms. Schill, and I will be starting with a quick kind of primer of revenue, of spreadsheets. To start, and I will be going over the revenue side of this spreadsheet in your handout. How is my volume, Madam Chair?
I'm getting a thumbs up from some members, but maybe a little closer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, great members. All right, proceeding to the spreadsheet. Today we will be giving kind of a 1.0 primer on the spreadsheet to provide context and discuss the purpose of tracking sheets. As you know, taxes is a finance committee, and the committee considers tax and spending proposals. Bill proposals will be tracked throughout the session by fiscal analysts in comparing the cost of those proposals to current law. When the governor's budget is released next week, a spreadsheet will be developed to compare the changes to current law. Spreadsheets are updated again when the House and the Senate update their omnibus tax bill. So with that, it is important to understand what is current law. Current law revenue or tax revenue and expenditures are forecast by MMB twice a year. And in checking with the legislative librarian, since 1994, MMB has been required to produce forecast twice a year in November and February. So the state has seen 28 years of forecast from MMB. The forecast reflects a continuation of current law and projected growth in the national state economies for revenues and expenditures. The MMB forecast is based on national and economic data such as GDP, unemployment, wages, and household information. Now, if we turn to the spreadsheet, looking at the spreadsheet, you can see on line three, there, it shows three biennia of current law tax revenue information.
Ms. Templin, could you just hold on a sec? Do people have this spreadsheet?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
It was in with the bill.
It might be in with your bill, not in your main green folder. I know. I'm sorry, Representative Kosnick. We're going to do better in the future, I promise. Okay, but it seems like people have it. Okay, perfect. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Ms. Schill.
Now, looking at the first page of the spreadsheet, column A shows the current law revenues for fiscal 22-23, which is the current biennium that ends on June 30th, 2023. Current law revenues for the general fund are $57.3 billion. In column B shows the projected general fund tax revenues for the fiscal 24-25 biennium, $57.817. This is the budget that the legislature is budgeting for this session. And then finally, column G shows the estimated general fund tax revenues for fiscal 26 and 27. that amount on line 3 is $62.83 billion. That biennium is a planning biennium showing the future budget effects of any appropriation or revenue provisions in current law. And below the totals are the forecasted amounts of tax revenue for each tax type, and I won't walk through those, but you can see the current law forecasted amounts for each tax type below. The revenue section doesn't contain any direct appropriations on this side of the spreadsheet. It shows only revenue collections forecasted each year and refunds, and refunds will show up as a negative because they're a cost. Since it shows only revenues, there are no base appropriations on this part of the spreadsheet. Just to repeat again, this spreadsheet will, on the revenue side, will be updated at the end of February when the February forecast is released, and again when the governor's budget is released and when the omnibus bills are released. The spreadsheet will show the changes, the proposed changes, the revenue impact relative to current law. If you have any questions about the spreadsheet, please ask the fiscal analyst, or if you have any questions about current law tax revenues, we should be able to answer that. These spreadsheets are posted on the House Fiscal Analysis Department website. Now I'll turn to my my partner, Ms. Still, to discuss the expenditure side.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal Analysis. If you think about the spreadsheet like a book, you just heard chapter one. Chapter two is the spending side. And so on pages, it's also listed page one and page two, but at the bottom right-hand corner, you can see general fund, property tax, aids, and credits. That gives you a clue that you're on the appropriation side, you're on the program spending side of the spreadsheet. The structure of this side of the spreadsheet is the same as tax revenues, but right under the header, okay, so if you look at the very top, you're going to see this statement. Positive numbers are program expenditures or revenue losses. Negative numbers are cost savings or revenue gains. Every spending committee, education, tax aids and credits, human services, is a spending committee. All of those numbers are positive. They are costs as we budget. And that's different from the revenue side of the spreadsheet. If you have any questions, always ask a fiscal analyst. Now, if you go down the page, you will see program expenditures here are all from the general fund. And the sheet is segmented into four sections. So, for example, tax refunds are on lines 2 through 10. Tax refunds represent about 40%, a little over 40% of total spending for revenues, aids, and credits. The second section is local aids, lines 12 through 39. That's where you'll find local government aid, county program aid, and other aids. The age section represents also about 40% of total spending. The third section is property tax credits, lines 42 through 58. And then there are three other sections. If you continue on to page two, you'll see taconite tax relief, aids and credits, local pension aids, and other aids and one-time appropriations. And that can that last section can include a variety of other kinds of spending items. Total spending is reflected on line 98, tax refunds, aids, and credits. If you look in column D, line 98, you'll see total spending forecasted for the fiscal year 24-25 biennium, just under $4.5 billion. And one last note, for any item on the spending side of the spreadsheet, there is a catalog of tax aids and credits and refunds. Each item listed on the spreadsheet is an entry in the catalog. It gives you a thumbnail description on what is what the item is, where you find it in the law, and how much has been spent for a period of 8 years. And now, revenue estimates.
Great.
Moving forward, Madam Chair, now we would like to discuss revenue estimates, another primer, kind of 1.0 on kind of how to read a revenue estimate. And so, with that, let's start with kind of the purpose of a revenue estimate. The revenue estimates provide the fiscal impact of proposed changes to tax laws. Or a revenue estimate also estimates changes in tax-related aids and credit expenditures. The latter type of estimates are mostly in division.
Ms. Templin, sorry, just a second. This is what we're looking at right here. It says sales and use tax, sales by state agricultural society. So that's we're sort of just using this as an example.
Thanks. You, Madam Chair, for highlighting that, the document that we're working off of. Again, the revenue estimate is not a fiscal note, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. Revenue estimates also only measure direct impacts to tax laws. They do not measure secondary impacts. House fiscal staff rely on official revenue estimates from the Department of Revenue for tracking the impact of proposed law changes. So with that, let's look at the revenue estimate and how it's structured. There are four sections in the revenue estimate. There's the fund impact, the description of the current law, a description of the proposed tax changes, and there's a revenue analysis details section. And then in property tax estimates, there is an evaluation of tax policy. So let's begin by discussing the proposal for House File 4640. I thought we would just use this bill as an estimate as just an example, because it's pretty straightforward and it's kind of a good kind of estimate to start from, because it doesn't have too many interactions in it. So House File 46 allows the State Agricultural Society to retain sales tax it collected in calendar year 22 and 23 on sales of tickets during or prior to the period of the annual state fair. That was the proposal in House File 4640. The revenue estimate also provides a description of current law, so that's provided for context. And then just above that is the fund section. The fund section shows the revenue impact or the cost for two biennia, or the cost over the budget window, the forecast window that is projected by MMB. First, you see the impact to the general fund. And in fiscal 23, you can see this proposal is estimated to have a $2.8 million general fund revenue reduction in that year. The estimate also provides information about the revenue reduction to the legacy fund. The legacy fund is constitutionally dedicated. This is the 3/8 of 1% on the sales tax. And this proposal is estimated to reduce revenue in that area by $200,000 for a total estimated revenue reduction of $3 million in fiscal 23. As you can see, there's also a revenue impact in fiscal 24, but no estimated impact in fiscal 25. So in the fiscal note, or excuse me, in the revenue estimate, compared to a fiscal note that prepared by LBO, the revenue estimate does not contain the fiscal impact of any operational changes to a state agency. In most instances, the revenue estimate does not have any administrative costs contained in the estimate. That does not mean there is no administrative cost for a proposed tax law change. It's just not reflected in the revenue estimate. On that note, the House Tax Committee does not have the operational budget for the Department of Revenue contained as an account for this committee. State government finance has the budget account for the administration of the Department of Revenue. So any funding appropriated in this committee board administration is on top of the budget authorized in the state government committee. So then finally, moving along on the revenue estimate, there's a section called revenue analysis detail. This section explains the methodology used to calculate the estimate. It contains information about data sources, economic assumptions, and also provides a description of any adjustments to the estimates, such as calendar year and fiscal year. So kind of to close things up on a revenue estimate, the role of a fiscal analyst is to review the revenue estimate prior to the hearing and to make sure the bill as proposed aligns with the revenue estimate. And we work closely with the Minnesota Department of Revenue Tax Research Office, you know, if we have questions about the estimate. And, or if you have questions about the estimate, please feel free to turn to a fiscal analyst and we can hopefully get questions answered. And then lastly, how to get a revenue estimate. The Department of Revenue doesn't prepare estimates on every single tax bill. However, if a bill is heard in the House or Senate Tax Committee, the bills will get a revenue estimate. It's 99.9% certain that a revenue estimate will be completed at some point during the legislative session. And then in addition to revenue estimates that are completed on bills that are heard in committee, sometimes revenue estimates are also heard on proposals, like draft proposals. If you would like to have a proposal estimated in a confidential way, please contact a fiscal analyst and we can submit that proposal to the Department of Revenue. If you can also reach out to your caucus researcher, Mr. Haydorn and Ms. Canavati, if you would like more information about revenue estimates. We work closely with the caucus researchers too. So, and that's all I have for revenue estimates unless there's questions.
Any questions from members for our fiscal staff? All right, not seeing any. Thank you so much, Ms. Schill and Ms. Templin, for joining us today and walking us through that information.
Oh, should I ask?
Oh, sorry. We're going to go through the fiscal note now. My bad, we're not done yet. Ms. Schill.
Madam Chair and members, Kathy Schill once again. I was just conferring with my colleague Cynthia Templin. There are times that you might have you might see in a bill, in the packet for a bill, more than one revenue estimate. And that is because the content of the bill might have a revenue impact and a property tax AIDS credit refund impact. And why could you have more than one estimate for that? Because the Department of Revenue actually has two sections to their research staff. And so the research staff, because there's either a state tax or a property tax implication, might each have their own revenue estimate. Once again, if you have any questions on why all of this information is coming to you on a single bill, please ask us. I will give you a brief overview of fiscal notes, but I will tell you first, revenue estimates maybe 90% of the time is what the tool that we use, and a fiscal note is maybe 10% of the time. And you have an example of each one in your packet. They look extremely different. And so that's your first clue on what you're looking at and what tool you'll have. For those of you who have not had the experience of a fiscal note is an official estimate of state government expenditures or non-tax revenues resulting from proposed legislation. A fiscal note is prepared by one or more state agencies impacted by the bill. And the fiscal note process is managed by the Legislative Budget Office. Okay, so for revenue estimates, it's the Department of Revenue. For the fiscal notes, it's Legislative Budget Office. And that's governed by Minnesota Statutes 3.98, addressing fiscal notes, requiring the head of any state agency, even the Supreme Court, to prepare a fiscal note at the request of the legislature. State law also defines minimal requirements in a fiscal note. Okay, so what does all this mean? For the tax committee, a fiscal note is needed only when a tax bill would cause a change in state agency administrative costs. An example of that would be adding more staff to the Department of Revenue for enhancing compliance audits. That's a typical example. The other case would be when there is a change in state agency revenues that are not collected by the Department of Revenue. Okay, what could that be? The example I have here is a change in licensing fees, maybe for the healthcare access fund. But it could be a variety of different things. The key point is it's a different kind of revenue other than what is monitored by Department of Revenue. And as Ms. Tomplin mentioned before, sometimes a bill can have both a revenue estimate and a fiscal note. If you are uncertain about any of the cost impacts or revenue impacts, please ask us. And one more thing I would like to point out before I get to the example, please bear with me. Generally speaking, most taxes and tax relief programs are based on a calendar year or payable year, which spans from January 1 to December 31st. While the state budget is done on a fiscal year starting on July 1 to June 30th. So revenue estimates and fiscal notes go through this fiscal year, I would say, conversion and for use in our budgeting process. And we really run into this like when you change the state general levy, for example. The way that the state general levy is levied, and that's something that I work with on a regular basis, January 1 through December 31, but actually when you see the impact on a revenue estimate, it looks very different than what you see in an overall levy. So please, once again, bear with us if we have to explain in the conversion process what the actual impact on the state budget would be, whether it's a revenue impact or an administrative impact. Now, Madam Chair, I've got a question for you. We included a sample in the packet, but today's bill actually requires a fiscal note instead of a revenue estimate.
Okay.
And so
I caught that.
You caught that. And so instead of using the easy example that we had for free filing, we will use Representative David's easy example.
Great.
For the taxpayer receipt. Now, that looks like, okay, once again, a proxy for House File 231, Representative David's bill, is kind of an old fiscal note. It's 8 pages long. And it's actually House File 1763 from the 2019-2020 legislative session. Do you all have that?
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
It should be in the green folder with the bill that we're going to hear today, 231.
And the author is Paul Marquardt, Representative Marquardt.
You might have heard of him. Yes,
Ms. Templin. I just want to add quickly to that a fiscal note has been requested based on the 23 version of the bill proposal by Representative David. That fiscal note is in process. The fiscal note that you have before you is almost identical to Representative David's.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Representative Davids.
I don't think there's any laws in committee about plagiarism, is there?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, although we haven't established rules, but I'm pretty sure everything's at the discretion of the chair, as you said, right? This is the rule right here. Didn't have to tell me twice. Ms. Templin, or Ms. Schill, excuse me.
So I'm going to try to do this in 2 minutes. This part of the fiscal note is the header. It has standard information about the bill, including the legislative session, the bill number, version number, which is important, and a description. So this would be House File 1763, version 1A, taxpayer receipt established. Okay, so that's basic information. This little box over here on the right-hand side saying state fiscal impact. And you'll see all those little boxes. That's helpful to better understand what kind of impact you might have. And this is important for us because in line 3, it says tax revenue. So what that would mean, and this particular one, it's X'd in the no column, but if it's X'd in the yes column, that means you would look for a revenue estimate also. Likewise, in the revenue estimate, there's that little box on the other side. It does the same thing. So that gives you a clue if you need both documents to have a full picture of the impact of your bill. Okay, and the main meat of the matter is this middle section that's shaded, and there's a big black box at the bottom. At the bottom of the middle section, that's a little confusing. But that is the state cost or state savings information, which is pretty critical. The front sheet is usually the summary sheet if it's more than one kind of agent, one agency presented in the bill on a regular estimates. You'll always find that information in that big black box is the bottom line. In this particular instance, there are two state agencies impacted. The lion's share is the MMB cost impact of about $100,000 in the first year of the biennium, and then ongoing costs of $47,000 in the ensuing years. And then there's a slight cost to the Department of Revenue. It's the coordination of the admin. And so the total cost you'll find in that black box. And then additional information includes FTEs and your LBO contact. In this particular one, it says legislative executive budget officer. That's because this is an old note. MMB used to do it. It is now legislative budget office. And additional information is always included in the estimate. Madam Chair, unless there are questions, that concludes the presentation of the fiscal note review.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Temple, just to add on to Mrs. Schill's description of the fiscal note, as you can see in the fiscal note from 2019, there is a cost to MMB of $100,000, and in 1 year and $47,000 in subsequent years. There is appropriation language in the bill. The fiscal note also shows that the Department of Revenue is showing a cost for the proposal. There is not an appropriation in the bill for those costs, and those costs would need to be added to the bill if that is something that the author would want to do or the committee later on during session. I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ms. Templin. And, yeah, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a clarifying question. If there ever is an appropriation in the bill text, does the fiscal note note that? And if so, where could you see that?
Ms. Schill.
Madam Chair and Representative
Lee.
Yes. Thank you. The fiscal note will not let you know if there is actual appropriation in the language in the bill unless it's contained in the narrative. So you would actually, from time to time in the narrative, they will describe what's going on in the bill, and they could refer to a specific section of the bill that says that there's an appropriation there. But it's not always a clear-cut case that the content of the fiscal note will say that the language is actually in the bill.
Representative Lee.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? All right. I'm not seeing any. Thank you so much. Ms. Schill, Ms. Templin will be seeing lots more of you as we move through our work. Okay. Next up, we have the Department of Revenue here. Deputy Commissioner Lee Ho is joining us. And Ms. Bears, it looks like. And Assistant Commissioner Kloxheim is here. Or are you a deputy or assistant? I think I called you the wrong thing on the floor the other day. I'm really sorry.
Madam Chair, if you want to promote me, I'll say.
Okay. I definitely called you deputy commissioner when I was presenting the conformity bill, so consider yourself promoted. Welcome. All right, Deputy Commissioner, take it away.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Ho, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. I want to say on behalf of Commissioner Marquardt, who he sends his apologies for not being able to be here today. With me is John Klockstein, our Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy, and also joining us is Joanna Bears, our Legislative Director, who's in the audience today. So first, I want to thank the committee for its fast action on the conformity bill. It made it in record time, and it really helped us get ahead of the current tax filing season. As you can see, we've already been sending out communications and notifying taxpayers of changes that are going to take place, and we're all in the process of getting ready so that we can open the filing season in tandem with the IRS in January, January 23rd. So as we look at our mission as an agency, the statute says we administer and enforce the assessment and collection of taxes, and we take that pretty seriously because there's approximately $33 billion in state revenues that we collect every year. But we also think of ourselves as funding the future for all of Minnesota, and it's really important to us to stay connected with the things, the good things that happen from state government and the things that we provide as an agency to help make those things happen. You know, for many, many years, and I think for the past several decades, the department has had the vision that everybody reports and pays and receives the right amount of tax, no more, no less. And that's really something that we live by in trying to create an equitable tax system for all Minnesotans. If you look at this pie chart here, you'll see that about 80% of the Minnesota taxes that we collect are income tax, sales, and corporate tax. And that, those are the three big ones. One of the things that's missing in this chart is really the property tax system. We have a small amount in this pie chart that represents state property taxes, but there's a much larger property tax piece that we are less involved with that is also a factor in thinking about state revenues. But that totals, the totals that we manage and administer is about $33 billion. And if we look at those $33 billion, Next slide. You know, we see that as covering things like education, infrastructure, health, safety, transportation, many, many things that Minnesotans take for granted in terms of every day their lives are touched by things that we provide funding to support. We also provide tax aids and credits to a large number of local and county governments. You know, it totals about $1 billion in state aid every year. $564 million of that is in local government aid, and about $264 million of that is county program aid. One of the things that we see as customers within the state is we serve a really broad range of customers from all the 87 counties where we provide property tax support and also local and county program aid to individual income taxpayers, to property tax assessors, and also businesses. But we also look at those groups as subset groups. For example, within the customers, we provide support for military members, for families, for farmers, for seniors, and others. And we look at businesses the same way. We try to identify businesses by common themes and try to work with them on the basis of what their needs are. With regarding local option sales tax, there's approximately $700 million in local option sales tax that we provide support to local governments with. Now, we also recognize that we serve the governor and the legislature, so we provide advice and counsel to the governor regarding taxation, and we also recommend appropriate law changes to the legislature to help serve Minnesota taxpayers. A key part of that is really the tax committee and this committee. And this is where we work with you and the governor's office to look and implement best practices in tax administration to find ways to better administer tax laws in a way that's simpler and more efficient for Minnesota taxpayers. We also produce revenue estimates and other things to help support the process, and that's something that our tax research division provides lots of information for this committee in the legislature to help us better understand the impact of the tax system as we know it today. The Department of Revenue has approximately 1,400 employees, and we administer about 30 different tax types, depending on how you count tax types. Approximately 75% of our budget, which is $188 million each year, is employees and people. 15% of it is technology, and we invest heavily in technology just to make sure that the systems perform well and are safe and secure so that people know that their data is protected. In order to support the tax code, it's really a partnership and a network of people, including individuals, businesses, tax professionals, support for volunteer income tax assistance sites, and software providers that helps make the tax system work. It's not all just about the Department of Revenue. All those things really need to work together in a network and with coordination in order to make the system work very well. You know, with supporting all these different tax types, the process does require a lot of coordination. And if you think about individual income tax, you know, we have all the changes that come from the legislative session. We process those changes and develop and review forms and instructions. And then we share those with tax practitioners and software providers to provide us feedback on those processes. And it's a cycle where they provide us feedback, we make changes if needed, and then we continue to provide them with that data until we get to a place where the system is as perfect as we can get it. At that point, we work with software providers and other vendors in order for the programming around the system to work well, and we test with it. So there's a fair amount of software testing that takes place as well in the fall. And that process literally takes us from the end of legislative session all the way through the start of the tax filing season. So there's a fair amount of work that goes into what starts the individual income tax season every year. And we're just beginning that today, or soon. A large part of what we do, because we're relying on this network of people to support us, is really deal with education. And so we do a lot of education with outreach and engagement in order to train and teach people how to meet their tax obligations. And with the different tax types, we're continually trying to update the information that we provide and prepare and try to reach out to people, especially if there's areas where we know there's challenges with compliance because there's a particularly complicated part of the tax code. We also try to engage the community a lot when there's special things that are happening, and a couple of those things, like the conformity with unemployment insurance benefits or the Paycheck Protection Program loan forgiveness, those are particular areas where we needed to work with taxpayers. And all told for that, we adjusted 540,000 returns in order to help meet the compliance needs there. That's one of the reasons why early conformity was really important to us, because when you conform after something's already been done, it requires adjusting all the returns that are affected by that, and it creates an additional burden either on the taxpayer or on the department in order to make those changes that are needed. At the same time, we're also trying to prepare for the next tax filing season. We also have a couple of offices that really are designed to support the taxpayers. One is our Office of Public Engagement, which is a place where we can develop relationships with different organizations and communities to help us better understand how the tax system affects different businesses or individual communities and give us better perspective on how we can make changes or how we can recommend changes that will make things better for Minnesotans. The other place that people can go is the Taxpayer Rights Advocate, and this is an office that operates somewhat independently of the department, and they have the ability to look at how we're administering the tax system and recommend changes or enforce actions if needed in order to support taxpayers that may be having challenges working with the department's normal processes and procedures. Lastly, I just want to reemphasize the importance of data security to us. We recognize that we are responsible and accountable for the information on taxes for millions of Minnesotans. both businesses and individuals, and it's something that we take very seriously. We partner with Minute in order to develop systems that meet federal standards and also meet best practices from industry in order to protect the data. You know, I do also want to recognize before I close that we have a number of agency partners as well. We work with MMB on revenue reporting. We also work with the Department of Administration to help get mailings out that in order to meet statutory obligations. And we also work with the Department of Employment and Economic Development when we need to send out checks. So we process the information and we share it. We work with our partners to get the information out to others. So I want to thank you all for having us here to talk about the Department of Revenue, and we're open to taking your questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Ho. Deputy Commissioner Ho, did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right, excellent. I have a question. It's kind of a dumb question, but so I once made an error on my taxes. I'm trying to remember the exact nature of it, but I got a letter back that said, hey, you messed this up. You didn't report this, or you over-reported X or Y. So you guys have that information. You collect it from employers. So why do we have to fill out tax forms at all if you guys collect all the information that you need to do the calculation in-house?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in our ideal world, we would have all that information to be able to do it without having the taxpayer having to do, you know, lift a finger. The challenge we have is that there are a number of places where information reporting is not as seamless as withholding. So if you have any additional deductions or income that's not reported through the automated systems, we don't have any way to verify that. And so therefore we ask you to provide us that information just so that we can sort of reconcile the difference between your income and expenses and what we have as records.
I guess it seems to me that I'm curious about that because, you know, my understanding at least is that, like, it's not every country requires that a taxpayer files a form, because they do have that, you know, the reporting is happening between, you know, employers and the tax kind of enforcement agency and then all the various other sort of ways that people get income or you know, that is subject to taxes. And so I just like read in the paper, you know, about some of the high level shenanigans that I'm trying to avoid using the term ultra wealthy, but I don't know what else to use. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but just
Representative Davids. Well, I mean, I'm
offended by it.
Representative Davids and Representative Anderson, first of all, we're going to go through the chair if you have something to say, and you'll be recognized. You know, part of our challenge here, right, is that we can talk about the top 1% of income earners, 2% of income earners, 5% of income earners, and give very kind of bounded definitions of what that is. But as we discussed last week in our unrealized gains conversation that we started to have, you know, it's not as simple as that because of some of these tax avoidance strategies that high wealth people engage in. And so, I'm just sort of observing, I guess, that it seems that, you know, part of what happens when we have over decades a very complicated tax system that contains ways that, again, I just read about in the, you know, Washington Post, when the latest round of like the Pegasus papers or the, I'm trying to remember the other P word papers that have come out in the last several years. Just basically that, you know, we have, it's a kind of a choice to have a system that can be exploited in the ways that our system is. And I'm really interested in figuring out ways to make it more equitable between regular working class people who collect a paycheck and those who, you know, kind of rely on more exotic financial instruments. And as Representative Smith talked about, you know, that their main the main form of spending would come via borrowing against a fortune that you, the gains from which you never realize. So that's just sort of a lens that I'm looking at this work with, and so I appreciate the context because it is just sort of like something that I've been like, if they have all the info, and you know what's supposed to come out the other end, because a lot of us have received these sort of adjustments to our refund or to our liability that came about as a result. I mean, I would imagine of sort of an automatic, kind of an automatic process of reviewing tax returns. I'm just kind of curious about those choices. So thank you so much. Thanks for the indulgence. I don't know if anybody else has any questions. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I've gotten those letters as well, and they're usually like 3 years behind. But like you did something wrong a few years ago. But my question actually is kind of around same train of thought of making our filing easier. Can you remind me, federal taxes, they can be filed online for free, but the state level, we, you know, do that for certain income levels or below. Otherwise, people have to buy a product to do it. And just trying to jog my memory because I will be coming back with a request for a free filing proposal again.
Commissioner Ho.
Madam Chair, Representative Joachim, I believe that both for federal as well as state, there are conditions around who can file for free. And there are also the same possibilities with for state filing as well as federal, but it's limited in ways by income thresholds, and the products vary depending on what your sources of income are.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I was wondering if Representative Joachim was going to foreshadow one of her great efforts to help support people of all income levels to have that same support, but we'll hopefully get to that down the road here. All right, anyone else? Okay, I'm not seeing any further member questions. Thank you so much to the Department of Revenue for being present with us, and we'll be hearing from you guys more. And everybody knows Joanna Bears in the back, if you wanna wave. That's Joanna is our legislative liaison with the department and is always available and really generous with her time for questions. So thanks so much, you guys. Appreciate it. All right, the next item on our agenda, Representative Davids, is hearing House File 231, which is the taxpayer receipt. And sorry. This is my first time doing this part. So, Representative Davids, do you move that House File 231 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Excellent. So, Representative Davids has moved that his bill be laid over for possible inclusion. Please present your bill, Representative Davids.
So in House File 231, this is a bill where the goal is for taxpayer transparency. We create a receipt system to create more accountability and transparency for taxpayers within the system. That's what this bill does. A little history here. This bill was carried in the past by Chair Marquardt, and I would like officially to hear the department's position on this bill. And also, you'll see that there's a cost in your nonpartisan House research summary on House File 231. It's $100,000 and it goes to $47,000. I would just suggest that the department just absorb that cost, which I think would be a good thing. And just remember, members, too much of a good thing, well, it's a good thing. And so I would really appreciate your support in this bill. Maybe House Research could give us a little more as to what it does. That's basically what the bill does. And, Madam Chair, I would never criticize you in any way, but you made a comment that kind of made me shiver a little bit when you said that you had a dumb question. Chairs have no dumb questions. That does not exist.
Thank you for clarifying that, Representative Davids.
It was a very good question.
Thank you. And turning to Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez, Representative Davids, and members, there's sort of two pieces of this bill. There's a requirement for the Minnesota Management and Budget, and then also a requirement for the Department of Revenue. Section 1 of the bill deals with the MMB piece of that. They have to, the bill requires them to publish and annually update an interactive taxpayer receipt. The receipt would describe the share of state general fund revenues or expenditures represented by major expenditure categories, such as transportation, health and human services, education, and so forth. And it would also, based on the user's income, which would be input by the user, estimate the amount of income tax, sales tax, alcohol, tobacco, and motor vehicle fuels tax paid by the user. And it would also require the interactive receipt to display data on performance goals. The piece for the Department of Revenue is Section 2 of the bill, and that just requires the Department of Revenue to allow individual income tax filers to opt in to receiving information about the receipt, either through email or U.S. Mail. Section 3 is the appropriation, which Representative Davids mentioned. It's a $100,000 upfront appropriation in fiscal year 2024, and then it's the base is $47,000 ongoing.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Representative Davids.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And you'll notice I'm sitting up here with all my friends. I'm not aware of anyone that wishes to testify, but I'm at your discretion, certainly be open to anybody who wishes to testify for this bill. Not against it. you'll notice that with concerns, we'll say, you'll notice that I picked the top five tax areas. You know, that could go to 6, 8, 4, whatever the committee would decide, but those are the five major ones, the top five.
Great. Thank you, Representative Davids. Is there any member of the public that wishes to testify on House File 231? Please approach the stand and introduce yourself for the record and offer your testimony. I didn't mean to say approach the stand. That sounded really like we're in court. I know. Testifying table. There we go.
I'm going to just be brief. I've been around here a long time. My name is Mark Hughes, and I'm just a lowly member of the public. But I've been around here a long time, and I have watched Representative David's work. And I hope by now most of you know I've supported him in a lot of ways. And anything we can do to better our tax structure or make a more livable community tax-wise for people who state of Minnesota, which we serve, I support it. I'm going to support this. But I also am kind of want to make one more comment quick. I'm a little shook up today because I don't think it makes a difference if you're in the top 5%, the 139%. If we're working, we all pay taxes. And I'm going to probably make a lot of people mad, but I'm upset enough today to say maybe we should take a look at a flat tax, be it a federal or state or anything. But maybe we should start addressing it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wants to testify in House File 231? All right, I'm not seeing any. Is there any member discussion? Maybe I'll just discuss something quickly. I want to thank Representative Davids for bringing this forward. As he mentioned, you know, this has been a top priority of now Commissioner Marquardt. And so we sort of were doing this like as a sweet thing for the commissioner, but he has been called away to more important business. They're presenting part of their budget right now. Chair Lislegard and I kind of talk about this in terms of like the reason that there's so much, one of the reasons that there's so much attention on property taxes, like when we go out and talk to our communities, is because we, you know, if you own a home, you get that statement twice a year. And it does outline like, you know, this is sort of the jurisdiction that collects the different portions of the property tax, of the property taxes that we each pay every year.
if you're a homeowner, you get it. You don't get it if you're a renter. But this effort is really just to kind of provide more information to make those connections so that people do understand more about, you know, both about kind of how much tax we're paying over time, but also, you know, it makes this connection to, as it says as we were talking about in the overview, about like what your taxes get you, like what do they buy in the world, and what are the sort of, you know, to help people think through, you know, what are the things in our communities that we all rely on, that every individual and family and business in our community knows that, like, we need our streets to be of a decent quality, we need them to be plowed, we need, you know, someone to answer the 911 call when we make a 911 call, and we need, you know, education for our kids. So, just my gratitude to Representative Davids for bringing this bill forward. This also, you'll have to tell me if this has been a long time tradition, but certainly since I've been in office, in the tax committee, we have discussions about some of the big issues and some of those places where we diverge, but we do so in a respectful way. And we try to delve into those issues and sometimes those places of divergence, with rigor and respect for one another. And part of that is that usually the first bill that's heard is from a member of the opposite party of the chair. And so I'd really appreciate even though this is a Commissioner Marquardt priority, or has been when he was the chair, you bringing this forward, because I just think it helps us, you know, to remind us, right, that we're all moving together, we're moving forward together in a good way, with sort of the understanding that there are going to be differences, but we're going to try to find those places where we can agree on good policy that's good for all of the people in our communities. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple points here. First of all, the history, as I'm aware of it, I believe that after the 1998 elections, I became chairman of the Commerce Committee. It took seven committees rolled together called the Commerce and Regulated Industries. If you wrote a check for it, it came through my committee. Or our members' committee, I should say, wasn't my committee. And I thought, what could we do? Because we've been in the 90s, some really nasty fights in committees. And I thought, you know, if there's some way we could lessen this just a bit. So I thought, well, what if we heard a Democrat bill first? Not a Democrat bill to hear and kill, but a Democrat bill to hear and pass. And the first one, just for the history buffs here, was Representative Chris Haskamp from the Brainerd area needed some help on a banking issue. And so we heard that bill, and we passed it, and the governor signed it into law. So it does work, and I think it hopefully sets the tone for a more respectful committee, which I think you've done a great job at, Madam Chair. So one other point, and I'm going to get off just a little bit here, off track, but that's allowed in committee on the House floor. Speaker Hartman would certainly rule me out of order. But we're making comments like the fastest conformity bill ever, and I need help with this with staff, because I don't know if that's quite correct, because I think the fastest one was in 2001 with the disaster bill, the tsunami bill. And I think that went a couple days quicker, but that was one issue. We had has to be the fastest broad-ranging conformity bill in history. Could staff help me out here? Am I correct in that? What's the, I call it the Jimmy Johns bill, pretty fast. Madam Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Williams, we might have to dig back into the history books on that one, but.
Chair Gomez and Representative Davids, working with our fiscal staff, and especially our fiscal staff, compiled a list of recent sort of larger tax conformity bills, I'd say over the last 15 or 20 years. And the previous earliest conformity bill signed into law was January 13th of 2017. So we beat that by one day this year. However, I'm not certain one way or another if that disaster bill that you're describing was earlier. I don't know if that was included on our list, so maybe we can follow up with you on that after committee.
Madam Chair, Mr.
Representative Davids,
if you could, because, again, that was one issue. It was the tsunami bill. Republicans and Democrats came together, and that was a conformity. We conformed what the feds did. So just for fun, kicks and giggles.
it'd be interesting to see. So the other thing, Madam Chair, if I could, since we're not on the House floor, for members of this committee, use the Department of Revenue. We've got the great research staff, we've got great partisan staff, but from Ms. Bears and Deputy Commissioner Hall, these guys are like really smart. You know, just like our House researchers and our partisan research, if you had a question, I mean, don't beat your head against the wall, just ask them, because they're really good at what they do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Nothing to do with the bill whatsoever.
No, that's great. No problem there. I know that Representative Robbins, did you have a question or comment you wanted to add?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davids, I did have a question, and I apologize if I missed this, but, you know, the taxpayers inputting into the system quite a lot of information about how much alcohol or tobacco they buy, how many miles they drive by car, major purchases they've made. Is that data protected, and how long is the department going to store all that data?
I would let the department, I'm not sure if I could respond to that.
Absolutely.
I do believe, Madam Chair, you have to opt in, so you wouldn't have to.
Mr. Williams, did you have one?
Chair Gomez and Representative Robbins, the bill is silent on whether or not any of this data would be stored or held over. As Representative Davids mentioned, you would opt into receiving information about this website on your individual income tax return. So a taxpayer would have the option of going and interacting with this application or not. But the bill doesn't speak one way or another about whether or not any of the data classification related to interacting with this system.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Williams and Representative Davids. I would just suggest that perhaps that be considered or referred to judiciary, because I do think that's something, you know, taxpayers expect their data is protected, but if it's not explicitly in there, we might want to consider an addition. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Rep. Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Robbins. In just visiting quickly here with the department, it's not going to be stored. It's not going to be stored, but that's very important.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right. Is there any further discussion? Not seeing any. House File 231 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much, Representative Davids. Okay, so just for the next couple days, tomorrow we're going to hear from the Legislative Budget Office on the Tax Expenditure Review Commission report. So that's sort of a statutorily required report. I'm hoping that maybe a couple of you will get really excited about tax expenditures after receiving or after learning more about them, because we have to discuss, but there are new appointments at the end of the month to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. Representative Davids is on there now, and I'm on there, but I think now I probably won't be. I'll be like ex officio. So we're looking forward to receiving that. It's a body of work that we're starting off that, you know, we just finished the first year of that. And so we'll be hearing from them tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we're going to dig into the tax incident study and learn a little bit more about we'll visit more with tax research from the Department of Revenue and learn about their work. And, you know, the tax incident study has already come up a few times in our conversations, and it's a really important sort of baseline way that we think about our tax system overall. So looking forward to that. And with that, we are adjourned.